Do you like this show and you want to help support us? Do you want us to stay ad-free? Do you want extra episodes every month? Of course you do. Then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. Become a Patreon supporter of this very show. Another episode of the Nerd Cave Retro Show. My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
So how has your week been?
Not too bad. It's been, you know, work's been work for the most part. I mean, nothing too exciting going on. I know I mentioned this to you earlier today, but we're hoping to finally get the schedule for baseball season, whatever season we may have, next week. So I know we're likely going to be playing early May through the middle of September. So the season will be a little bit shorter than it normally is. But we don't know the exact dates that we're going to be playing yet. So yeah. Got that to look forward to. But other than that, just, you know, hanging out with the girlfriend. I played the Bonk's Adventure, which I'll be reviewing tonight, that I'm excited to talk about. My first venture into the TurboGrafx-16 world, which was fun to do. So, other than that, just usual stuff. What about you?
It's been a pretty good week. I haven't really played too many games. I did a test stream the other night of my Nintendo Switch on Twitch and played Castlevania for a little while. And then played Kid Dracula for a bit, which sounds like it's going to be a kid's game, but it's not. It's pretty tough. And started playing that, and it's sort of like, imagine playing Mega Man, but you're playing with, your character has the mobility was it Simon Belmont in the first one?
I think it was Simon Belmont.
Imagine trying to play Mega Man with Simon Belmont. It's like that. It's kind of tough.
Lord. Sounds like it.
Yeah. It was fun, though. But yeah, I had everybody cracking up because the first first boss that comes up is a ghost, but he looks like a clan member. So I was screaming, it's the clan!
Oh, no.
And that was fun, and I'd like to play it again. I may actually review it here in the next couple of weeks, so we'll see.
No, I'd be excited to hear about it, just for that one comment alone.
You can actually go, I have the video up on my Twitch stream if you want to go watch it. It's towards the end, so.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
But I lit a fire on Twitter today too, which I should have known better. But oh boy,
here's the thing though, you gotta have some level of objectivity,
yeah,
in perspective when you post stuff. Like, very rarely do things swing one way completely, and you gotta like. I mean, we're talking, and I'm going to pronounce her name wrong, but I believe it's Gina Carano, who played Kara in The Mandalorian, was fired due to the comments that she made on social media, and people are in arms like, oh, cancel culture strikes again. But I'm like, it goes both ways. Like, it's not a liberal thing. Like, you look at, and because of what you posted, look at the Colin Kaepernick situation in the NFL years ago. Mm-hmm. It's practically the same thing. Different circumstances, but same type of situation, if you will.
Yeah, and my point being, you know, it's not up to me to say if she gets fired or not. I mean, who knows what is in those contracts when you work for Disney? I mean, Disney of all things. And you say something like, I kind of understand the point she was trying to make with her post, but at the same time, when you make a post about Jews and the Holocaust and Nazis, and you work for Disney, knowing the history that Walt Disney had with the Nazis and supposedly being a Nazi sympathizer. Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Disney's going to put the squash on that pretty quick. So, you know, I don't know.
I mean, you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Exactly. I mean, if you're going to throw that kind of... And that's that. And my biggest point was, freedom of speech does not mean freedom from consequences. If you say what you say, there's going to be consequences. Like, yeah, it's a free country. You can say what you want. That doesn't mean your job won't fire you for saying something stupid. That's just, that's America. So, I didn't, and people want to scream and shout at me. Like, I didn't know that just for, you know, putting out an opinion like that, people want to try to climb up my ass as far as they can go yelling at me. So, I'm just here to say I wasn't, I mean, yeah, I was trying to ruffle some feathers, but I was just trying to make people think. But people don't like to think. They don't like to have mirrors put up to their hypocrisy. So, learned a lesson. Another one, which I should have learned a long time ago.
The sad thing is that you shouldn't be ridiculed for posting something like that.
Yeah, well.
There's two sides to every story.
I think I defended my position pretty well a few
times.
Yeah,
I thought so.
You never know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't own Disney, so it's not my place to say whether she should have been fired or not. I'm just saying she said something stupid, and now she's got to pay the price for it.
Yeah. Yeah, her opinion or not, she should have enough awareness to know that, hey, probably shouldn't say something like this since I signed a contract with Disney.
And if they didn't fire, it wouldn't bother me either. You know why? Because I can separate the art from the artist. Like, yeah, I'm a left-leaning person, but I don't care what people's politics are. Like, I think Ted Nugent is a gun-toting pedophile psychopath, but I'll still play some Wang Dang Sweet Poontang when I'm driving to work, you know?
Does it have you in a stranglehold?
Yeah, in a stranglehold and get some cat scratch fever. Like, yeah, that's some rock. That's some good songs, man. But I don't like his personal politics. I think he's a nut.
just about that much.
A little bit. We got a lot of news to get into this evening. Would you like to jump into it?
Yeah, we got some good stuff to talk about.
Here we go. Some pretty good Sonic news. So you want to take the first one or you want me to take the first one?
I would love to take the first one.
You take it then.
All right. So this comes to us from movieweb.com. Sonic the Hedgehog, and this is a question. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 wants Jason Momoa as Knuckles. Fans' wishes may come true. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 may be bringing in some major star power. It's been reported that Jason Momoa, aka from Game of Thrones and Aquaman, has been offered the role of Knuckles in the upcoming sequel. Whether or not the star accepts the role remains to be seen, but it appears that the filmmakers are aiming high on this one. He has indeed been offered the role of Knuckles, according to a report that it doesn't say. It's previously been confirmed that the fan favorite character will appear in the sequel, which is expected to begin production in March. Paramount has put the ball in his court. So what do you think about this? I know that I've made it known on the show that I would love for Mr. Johnson, aka The Rock, to be the voice of Knuckles. But personally, after thinking about it, I think Jason Momoa might be a better fit for the character.
I think so too. I mean, I'm good with both of them, either one. But I love Jason Momoa, and I think he's got that. He's got a little more of an attitude that I think fits Knuckles. So I think it's a pretty good pick. If he accepts the role, I think it'd be a good thing, not only for his career, which he's got a great career already, but if he does this, he would be beloved amongst the, you know, even the, like the Sonic fandom. But yeah, I think he's a pretty good choice for the role.
Well, I know he's got Aquaman 2 coming up, so he's going to be busy, but voice work is a little bit different actually flying out on location. I mean, it's a little more flexible for him to go into a studio and record some lines. But yeah, and I was having this conversation with a friend of mine today. Initially, I was against Knuckles being in the sequel because I don't want them to add too much.
Yeah.
Like, I if they include Tails and build on that friendship, I think that should be the focal point of the second movie. And it almost kind of reflects the video games, too, where you bring Tails in for the sequel and then bring Knuckles in for the third one. But if Knuckles is in it, thinking about it, I don't really have an issue with it. As long as they don't add any other of the Sonic characters.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want them to throw in Metal Sonic or Amy Rose or Shadow just yet. Just
don't do
throw in Tails and Knuckles.
Don't do the sequel itis where they throw in too many characters. Just keep it simple.
Which, real quick, they did also announce the release date for Sonic 2, and it's going to be called just Sonic the Hedgehog 2. They released the logo, which looks really cool because the end of the 2 has two tails coming out of it for Tails.
Cool.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It'll be released April 8th, 2022. So exciting stuff. Like, I'm ready to hear more about the Sonic 2 movie.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to hear at least start getting some rumors about what's going on in the story. You know, I like to do the whole rumor mill thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different avenues that they could go from where they left the first movie. I do definitely think we're going to see more of, like, the traditional Sonic lore be introduced. Like, if, you know, they bring Knuckles in, I think it's very clear they're going to bring the Chaos Emeralds in. Hopefully they do a little more non-Earth scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm
like
hoping.
Going back to Sonic's home world would be kind of cool. Seeing more of the Mushroom World or even some of the other ones that were on that map that Sonic had would be kind of cool.
Maybe Jim Carrey will make a return and see Dr. Robotnik maybe doing some planet hopping and they're chasing each other around the map.
I hope so. I think, could you in theory do a second movie without Robotnik? Yes, but I mean, to me, Jim Carrey was the MVP of that whole movie. So I think to not have him in it would be a major disservice.
Yeah, I think if you didn't add him into the second one, it would be a huge, there would be a huge Jim Carrey sized hole in the in that movie. Because he pretty much made that first movie.
Oh, for sure.
Without him, that movie wouldn't have been what it was, I don't think.
Yeah. So exciting stuff.
More Sonic news. This comes from TheVerge.com, and this was given to us by Axeblade07 and I Am The Rampage. TheVerge.com, Lego is making a Sonic Mania-themed set inspired by a fan creation. Lego is announcing a new video game-themed set featuring Sonic the Hedgehog and characters from Sonic Mania. You can get a look at the concept design for the set, which is themed around Sonic's classic Green Hill Zone stage at the top of the post. The concept for the set was submitted by Viv Granell, I guess I'm saying that right, a Sonic fan based in the UK through the LEGO Ideas program. Submissions need to receive 10,000 votes before LEGO will consider making them an actual logo set, so it's no small feat that Granell was able to get the necessary support for the idea to become a reality. You want to see more pictures of the concept, check out Granell's page for the project on the LEGO Ideas site. It's a pretty cool looking set. I dig it. I'm not sure if I like the look of Sonic as a Lego character, but I don't know. He seems a little too light blue for me.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, when I saw the headline for this in our Google Doc, my initial thought was, how did they create Sonic as a Lego character? And that's really my only critique of it. Yeah, I mean, he looks a little different than your traditional Lego figurine, but it'd be tough to take like the base model of what they normally do and create Sonic built off of. But yeah, he needs to be a little bit of a darker blue. But I love the, you know, the Green Hill set with the checkerboard loop, and you've got the sunflower and the ring, and it's even you've even got the extra life on top of it, which is pretty cool. So I dig the set.
Yeah, I dig the Dr. Robotnik, too.
The giant robot.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool set centerpiece to the set right there.
For sure. I still haven't got my hands on the Mario Lego set. I mean, eventually I would like to.
I've almost pulled the trigger a couple of times when I was in Walmart and Target. I see them all the time, and I'm like, I want it, but I don't need it.
Yeah, they have the display set in Target where you can actually see like the interactive aspect of it, and I'm like, that's so cool, and I want it. But
and I saw some at Best Buy too. I wanted to get. I was like, why do I run into this everywhere I go?
It's just like, take my money.
Take my money.
Take. Oh man, but yeah, I dig the set. It's pretty cool. But our next story comes to us from NintendoLife.com. Always enjoy reading articles from there. Resident Evil returns to the big screen on September 3rd. Capcom might be busy preparing Resident Evil Village, but it isn't letting up with its adaptations. We were made aware of plans for Netflix series Resident Evil Infinite Darkness back in September, and now Sony Pictures has confirmed its live-action film reboot will launch September 3rd, 2021. As reported by Deadline, this upcoming release is completely separate from Paul W.S. Anderson's commercially successful film series. Directed by Johannes Robert, is taking us back to Raccoon City in 1998 and looks set to be an origin story incorporating elements from Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2. Roberts confirmed, "I really wanted to go back to the original first two games and recreate the terrifying, visceral experience I had when I first played them, whilst at the same time telling a grounded human story about a small dying American town that feels both relatable and relevant to today's audiences." I love that they're setting it in 1998.
Yes.
And making it an origin story. That's exactly what they need to do.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I did like the very first Resident Evil movie with Mia Jovovich. I thought it was a really good movie, but it had nothing to do with the game, pretty much. It's just kind of like, it's one of those things where, almost like the Super Mario Brothers movie, where people who wrote the movie never played the game and was just kind of told, like, here's what the game's about. Go make a movie. And it was okay. It wasn't bad. But I really want that experience of, you know, what they're talking about. I want those experiences of the first two games and going back to actual Raccoon City in 1998. And that's just awesome to me.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they need to do. And I'm not nearly as knowledgeable about Resident Evil as you are. But like you, I enjoyed the first Resident Evil movie for what it was. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many Resident Evil movies there were?
Oh, God, like 7. And the weird thing is they didn't number them. They just named them. So I don't even know which one's which.
So you had, there were 6 total. You had Resident Evil released in 2002. Apocalypse, 2004, uh-huh. Extinction, 2007, Afterlife, 2010, Retribution, 2012, and Resident Evil, The Final Chapter, in 2016.
Wow.
That's a lot of movies.
And I really only like the first one. the rest of them are kind of garbage.
I watched the second and third one, but honestly, I couldn't tell you a single thing that happened in them. Like, whichever. I remember watching them, but I have no recollection of what actually happened.
Whichever one was the one that was set in Las Vegas, and it was just pretty much Las Vegas was covered by sand. That one was pretty decent. I remember thinking it was okay. I don't even remember which one that was, but, you know, I don't remember anything from any of those other movies. So I really hope they kind of just make it more like the games and give me that visceral experience of being in a city that's basically in the grips of, you know, the zombie outbreak and them having to deal with that. That's what I want a nice small story that takes place in Raccoon City.
I've said it before, all we needed was one successful video game movie to start the trend.
Yep.
It happened with Sonic.
Thank you, Sonic.
So I have pretty good hopes for this.
Yeah, me too. I hope it's good. I really do. And I hope we're able to go back to the theaters in September too.
I certainly hope so. I really hope so. Because there, I mean, that's a whole separate discussion, but
yeah. This is definitely something I want to see in the theater, eat some popcorn, get a nice big soda, and just have a good time.
could go for some movie theater popcorn now, actually.
Dude. You ain't kidding.
Cover that shit with butter.
Oh, I love it.
Mm.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
The next story. You're making me hungry. Stop it. This is from NintendoLife.com. The NES is getting a new game that's all about putting out fires. Karugemo, the developer behind Japanese cult classics Protect Me Night, Gotta Protectors, and Amazon's Running Diet, is bringing a new game to the NES / Famicom. Blaze Rangers, or Hono no Ranger Man, as it's known in Japan, has been developed and has been developed with Mapper Zero restrictions in mind, making it akin to some of the earliest releases for Nintendo's 8-bit console. It's a single-screen action game which places you in the role of a firefighter who must rescue kids from burning buildings. Here are some key points direct from the PR. Exciting and unique firefighting gameplay. More than 32 challenging levels with many hidden secrets, a wide array of power-ups, two different game modes with strong changes to gameplay, two-player co-op, partner can join in at any time, randomly generated dangers. Each playthrough will challenge you in new ways, and the game was developed with Mapper Zero restrictions, which were earliest cartridges for NES and Famicom. It's getting a physical release thanks to First Press Games, which is scheduled for May of this year. Pre-orders open from the 30th of January, which was, almost 2 weeks ago. So if you're interested, it is regular edition. It will be $54.99. Collector's edition is $79.99. And super bundle is $169.99, limited to 100 pieces. And holy crap, this super bundle comes with a lot of stuff. Holy crap.
I just want it for the water gun.
I know. You got like a little, it looks like a little fire extinguisher. You get two NES compatible game carts with authentic packaging and extensive manuals, deluxe CD soundtrack, the water gun, luxurious limited edition box set, double-sided poster, clear files. I guess that's almost like posters. Collector coins and erasers that look like NES cartridges. Me want.
Yeah, the video actually, the watching the video, the game looked pretty fun. It reminded me of Dig Dug.
Yeah, a little bit.
But this extra stuff that you get, like you said, the actual box looks pretty cool, but it comes with the soundtrack. Water gun, like all that stuff is really, really cool.
Man,
I love when we find stories like this, and not just that new games that are made in the same style of, say, like the NES or the Super Nintendo, but the fact that they're actually making physical cartridges for it is awesome.
Yeah, I can't really afford the $170 super bundle, but I might go ahead and just get a regular edition just to have it. I mean, how often do they make new NES games? And the box art, the actual box for it, not the limited edition box set, but the actual box looks like the old black box cartridges for the NES. I love that. I'm in love with it too. I'm in love with it. I love it. I would marry it right now.
Oh, man. There's several romantic songs that I could sing, but I won't torture the listeners by doing that. But I'll just say this looks really cool. I think the gameplay looks fun. I would like to play this.
Yes, me too. Just imagine what it's like to get a brand new Nintendo game and pop it into the system. Like, I haven't had new Nintendo game, like, fresh out of the package, never been opened in 30 years, probably.
Just be sure to blow on the cartridge first. Our next story comes to us from ScreenRant.com. Sega is splitting into separate gaming and pachinko companies. Interesting headline.
Uh-huh.
Japan-based developer and publisher Sega Sammy is restructuring its business operations by splitting its video game division and its pachinko division into two separate businesses. The movie may reignite rumors that Sega will be selling its video game sector to Microsoft, mm-hmm. although it's also likely that the company is simply cleaning house and refocusing its resources. While Sega may be known far and wide primarily as a video game company, it actually started life working with coin-operated entertainment machines, including slot machines, as far back as the 60s. The company moved into video game production in the 70s, where it benefited tremendously from the video game boom of the 70s and 80s. In 2004, Sega merged with Sammy Corporation, a company that specializes in pachinko machines, and became the holding company Sega Sammy. So, yeah, a lot of people may not know that about Sega and its history and how it eventually came to where it is now. So this may not have come as big of a shock to me as it would other people, but still good to know. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, the other half of the Sega Corporation, if you will, is into pachinko machines.
Yeah, kind of the same thing with Konami. That's the reason why you don't see too many Konami games anymore, is because all their resources are going into pachinko. I guess that's pretty big in Japan.
That should be our spinoff show, Nerd Cave Pachinko.
But I thought it was pretty interesting, you know, the news dropped before this article dropped that Sega was being courted by Microsoft to be bought, which I think is a pretty interesting takeover if it happens, because
there'll be a big get for Microsoft.
Yeah, and not only that, but for Sega itself to kind of bring itself out of the depths, I guess you'd say. I mean, they've been doing stuff for Nintendo, you know, the last 20-something years, because, you know, Sega doesn't make consoles anymore. But I think it'd be pretty interesting if Sega gets taken over by Microsoft and all those old Sega properties get kind of revitalized. That's kind of exciting.
If that happens, then it makes the choice of what new console to get fairly easy for me.
Yeah, especially if you get a Sonic game in the style of the old 2D side-scrollers, but with the power of the Xbox Series X.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
That'd be fun.
Are you surprised that we still haven't really heard anything about a new Sonic game?
Well, honestly, I mean, Sega came out last year and said, oh, you're going to get a bunch of Sonic news this year, and then nothing. So maybe this is the reason we haven't heard anything.
Could be. I just think, I would love, because we had the Mario All-Star Collection last year, and I'm fairly convinced that Nintendo is going to do the same with Zelda uh-huh. this year. It would be cool if, say, like, Sega does get bought by Microsoft. What if, like, to kick off that announcement, they're like, okay, here's a Sonic collection exclusively for the Xbox Series. Like, it's like you remaster like Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2, and then as a collection put a lot of those old games on there too. Like, make it a Sonic Anthology collection would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you never know. I mean, that might get announced this year. I mean, because who knows how long they've been talking to Microsoft. I mean, that deal might have already been done and we just don't know about it yet.
It's just funny how this year is the 30-year anniversary of Sonic. Last year, we got the movie, uh-huh. and next year, we get the sequel to the movie. But nothing on his actual 30-year anniversary.
Yeah, they had all that momentum after the movie, and then nothing. Like, what are you doing, Sega? Like, this is why your consoles failed.
I really thought, because you remember a few months ago when they were teasing, like, this huge announcement? I was hoping that they were going to get back into the console game.
I'd like for them to. I mean, more competition makes better stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be an interesting story to follow for sure.
For the last story, this is actually a Kickstarter announcement. I'll let you talk about this because Tyler sent us this the other day.
Yeah, so shout out to Tyler Watson for sending us this. The headline just simply reads Game Master Classified, an insider's guide to Nintendo's coming of age. The ultimate Nintendo fan, Matthew Toronto, I'm not sure how you say his last name, teams up with Nintendo's own game master Howard Phillips to make a tell-all book. I could have just stopped at that, and yeah. I would have been like, I'm in. Because I love the cover because it's a take on the original issue of Nintendo Power. With for those who I'm sure you remember with Nintendo Power, the first issue was like a claymation Super Mario Brothers 2 with Mario in the foreground and Wart in the background. But it's got Matthew and Howard on the cover. And it essentially is going to be Howard's tell-all story. And there's some cool pictures in the article of what the actual inside of the book's going to look like.
Uh-huh.
And it's got 27 days left as we're recording this. Its goal was $23,000. It has made $49,337.
I think when it has first looked at
750 backers.
I think when I first looked at this the other day, it was only at like, what, 11,000? And now it's already at almost 50.
It's awesome.
With still 27 days to go. Yeah, I'd say this thing's getting made. They're already smashed their record for a $23,000 goal. They're already at 50,000.
But on their tiers, award tiers, it says estimated delivery of February 2022. I really like. I want to get this book.
Yeah, me
badly.
Too.
Like this will be so much fun to read because you know just as well as I do. Like that era of Nintendo and reading all the articles in Nintendo Power and reading the reviews and everything was, you know, every month I would look forward to getting that magazine in the mail.
You know, as many video game documentaries as we've gotten in video game movies we've gotten over the past few years, I really wish somebody would do a Howard Phillips documentary.
Oh, that'd be great.
Especially, you know, about all of his basically his start. The dude started in the warehouse, like unloading Donkey Kong machines, and worked his way up to being the guy that tested all the games before they were released to, you know, the public. And he was the reason we got Super Mario Brothers 2 that was Doki Doki Panic in Japan and was Super Mario Brothers 2 in America because he played the real Super Mario Brothers 2, the Lost Levels, and was like, this is not fun. You know, and he did that for a lot of games. Like, that Nintendo seal of quality was basically Howard Phillips. It had to pass through him to be able to get, released.
Yeah, and people don't realize the significance that he's had with Nintendo. So, like, getting to read his story is going to be so much fun. Yeah. But I agree with you. A Howard Phillips documentary would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I wish there were more Nintendo documentaries.
I could watch video game documentaries all day, every day.
Yeah, same. But I definitely want to get a copy of this when it comes out.
Oh, yeah, me too. But yeah, I think you got to get like the $39 level in order to get the actual physical copy of the book.
Yeah, the first tier is just the ebook.
Yeah,
so it'll be like a PDF file.
First one is $10 pledge without a reward just because you believe in it. And then there's a $19 reward, which is just a PDF. And then with the desert level, which is $39, you get the hardcover.
Yeah, then let's see, $54, you have the water level, where you'll have your name immortalized in every copy of Game Master Classified. It gets you in the book's Wall of Fame alongside a mention of whatever NES game you want.
Wow. The $64 level, you mushroom up your copy of the book by getting it signed by Howard and Matthew. There's a 2P desert level. You get two copies. 79 or more, get a hardcover signed by Howard and Matthew. NES title of your choice. 109. God, they got a lot of levels on here. Just go on there. Go to Kickstarter.com, Game Master Classified. Take a look at it. Throw some money at it if you're interested. I'm definitely interested. I want to read more about Howard Phillips. I want to get him on the show one of these days. I'm trying every avenue I know to get to that man, and one day I'll find the right avenue to get to him and get him on this show.
Oh, that would be fantastic. We need to get him and Reggie.
But did you want to go ahead and go into the review, or you want to go ahead and do video game history, or shove it to next week?
We can postpone it to next week.
Okay, yeah, because we're running a little bit long tonight. So
yeah, we had a lot of news to talk about. So. Yeah.
But before we do the review, Derek has shout-outs.
Yeah, as always, we like to shout out our awesome patrons at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout out Armez Jackson, XBlade07, Daniel Salmon, John Jekyll, a.k.a. Mixmaster, Carlos Longoria, Staff Sergeant Sketch, Randy Bailey, Tyler Watson, Justin Olson, Brandon Rutledge, and Donner Party of Five. Thank you guys so much for your continued contributions to our Patreon. And because you've kept us still at the $50 level, we will continue to do fun commentary tracks. And this month, this is going to be a fun one. We're going to do Transformers the Movie, which I don't think I've watched since I was in college. So that's going to be a lot of fun to do.
Dude,
I can't wait for that.
I am so excited to do that movie.
yeah, it's going to be great. And if you want to have access to those fun commentary tracks, if you want to vote in our poll for our monthly roundtable discussion, which we'll be doing Donkey Kong later this month. And then the poll for March is currently up. So if you are a patron and you haven't voted yet, be sure to get your vote in, because that closes at the end of the month. And if you want to be a part of it, just head on over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro.
Oh, and before we do the review, don't forget about our Discord as well, where you can just go to our Twitter. And at the very top in our bio is the link to our Discord server. Go join our community, where everybody was making fun of me the other day for people were making memes about me, man.
You know it's bad when I'm the one who's like not going after you.
Because apparently I let everything pass me by if it's not Nintendo related, which is wrong. But they're
the one of the guy looking back at the girl and it said Nintendo, Metroid, the girl in the foreground, everything else.
It's true.
I mean, it is. That's what makes it funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go into the review for tonight. Derek's going to be talking about music right there.
I'm not gonna lie, I love the music from this game. It's a little repetitive, but it's so catchy that I have no problem with it. So this week I'm going to be reviewing Bonk's Adventure, which is a scrolling platform game developed by Red Company and Atlus, released in 1989 in Japan and 1990 in North America for the TurboGrafx-16. Yes, believe it or not, I am reviewing a non-SNES or N64 game. In Japan, it was titled PC Genjin, a play on the Japanese name for the system PC Engine. It was the first game in the Bonk series and followed by two more games for the TurboGrafx-16 before branching out to other platforms. So this was not just my first time playing the TurboGrafx-16 Mini, but my first time playing a TurboGrafx-16, period. And I was excited to play this game because, you know, looking at the options that the TurboGrafx-16 Mini has, I was thinking, you know what? I could go for a good old-fashioned fun platformer type game. Because, like, you know, those were the games that, like, Mario Brothers and games like that were ones that I initially grew up loving. That's what got me into video games. So I watched a little bit of gameplay of it on YouTube before I actually started playing it, and it seemed, you know, fairly straightforward, like a lot of those platformers are from that age. But there's a certain charm about it that I really like, and it starts with the look of the game. So as I said, this is a TurboGrafx game, so the look of it reminds me of like late NES type graphics, you know, yeah, where it's getting into that kind of like bright, vibrant type of look. And the characters still look 8-bit, but a little more detailed than you might remember from the early days of the Nintendo. And I, honestly, yeah, it looks, you know, like a game that was made in the late 80s, early 90s. But I for one, think that style, and I'm not sure if you agree with me, but I think that style still holds up to this day because a lot of indie games are made with that same style. So
yeah, I think the pixel art style of those old games is never going to go out of style.
Yeah, it has that kind of timeless feel to it, you know, that a lot of like really realistic games, looking games for the time, like we use Twilight Princess as an example, you know, like that was one where Zelda took a departure from the animated look and went more realistic, but stylistically the game doesn't hold up like a lot of the other ones do. So that was the first thing that kind of caught my eye with Bonk's Adventure was the look of the game. I think it looks great. It still holds up to this day. The gameplay is pretty straightforward. So literally what you do is you use Bonk's head to essentially headbutt enemies. Or you can do this kind of like diving jump where you jump in the air and you dive headfirst onto, you know, enemy dinosaurs or whatever the case may be. And that's your attack. And you do get upgrades. You get so you eat vegetables to replenish your health. You start with 3 hearts and you get hit. Your health is depleted and you can recover it over time by eating different vegetables you find throughout the game. But you can also eat pieces of meat to upgrade yourself. So like if you eat a small piece of meat, it makes you a little bit stronger. And then you eat another piece, it makes you invincible, kind of like the star in the Mario games.
I was just reading it. It said meat can be found in 2 varieties, big meat and small meat.
Yeah, whenever I read that article, whenever I read this for the first time, I was like, you know what? I might be 34, but maturity-wise, I'm a little bit younger than that. But
it says eating a small meat while in stage 2 will also put Bonk into the 3rd invincible stage of meat power.
Super meat power.
I think I played bass for Meat Power back in the 90s.
That's a great band name.
Meat Power.
Bonk's Meat Power. That's a good name. Anybody who's an aspiring musician who's listening to this podcast, you're welcome. You have a band name. But yeah, that's essentially your like major power-up that you get. Other than that, you go through, you fight other dinosaurs, you can collect these little smiley face. They're almost like coins in a way, and then they add to your score when you complete a level. But it's not a very long game. I haven't completed it, but I'm pretty close to the end of it. It's not a very long game, but for what it is, I've actually really enjoyed it. I don't know how much. Do you have any questions about?
It a little bit. I did play it a lot back in the early 90s. Used to go to me and my friend, Lance. We used to go on our Saturday nights were spent going to we'd have band practice in the afternoon, and then afterwards we would go to Toys R Us and just spend hours playing the consoles that they had set up. With they had a TurboGrafx-16 set up, they had Sega Genesis, of course Super Nintendo. You can go in and just play them, and you go in at night and there's nobody there, so we would just spend hours playing, you know, demos of games and stuff. And I used to play the TurboGrafx-16 a lot. And they always had Bonk on there, and I would always play that. And I never got a TurboGrafx-16, but was always interested in getting one. And then finally, you know, we got sent the, it was Axe-Blade 07 that sent us the TurboGrafx-16 Mini. It was really the first time I ever really got, like, a lot of time to really spend with it. But I still didn't spend a whole lot of time playing Bonk. I don't know, it just seemed a little... I don't know, I just kind of couldn't get into it. It seemed a little too cutesy for my taste. Almost like Kirby. Even though I found Kirby to be pretty fun. It's still... It's one of those games that it's fun to play for a little bit, but it gets old really fast. And, you know, they did try to make Bonk their their Mario for the TurboGrafx-16. I think they did a pretty good job with it. You know, I always associated TurboGrafx-16 with Bonk, and that always seemed like a good game to bundle the system with. And I think they did. That was a smart move on their part, because I think it did sell a lot of systems for them, having Bonk as their kind of mascot. And they did three games, so apparently it did pretty well. But then, of course, Bonk showed up on the NES around... what year was that it ended up on the NES? Does it say?
It doesn't say on here. It just says it was released for TurboGrafx in 90 in the States.
Yeah, I think it might have been... It was late in the Nintendo's life when Bonk ended up on the Nintendo. I would say probably around 94 it ended up on the Nintendo. And I never played the Nintendo version. Might be one of those games I might have to review one of these days. But yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of time playing Bonk. I played more, you know, the Castlevania, and played a lot, Splatterhouse, things that I never got to play back in the day that I wanted to play. But yeah, it just seemed a little too cutesy for my taste.
Yeah, and you addressed actually my biggest critique of the game. While I enjoy it, I think it's a fun platform game to play. It's one of those that you can figure out the objective pretty quickly and figure out, you know, your attack move and what you have to do. I don't think it has a lot of replay value.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love the environment. I think the graphics look great. I think the music is fun, but as you mentioned, after playing it for a while, you get a little bored with it. Because there's nothing really different that happens. It's you go through a prehistoric theme level, you fight your boss, you move on to the next one, and you rinse and repeat.
Yeah,
essentially. I did want to talk about the story real quick. The game's protagonist is Bonk, a strong and bald cave boy who battles anthropomorphic dinosaurs and other prehistoric enemies. Bonk's mission is to rescue Princess Za, a small pink Pleiosaurus-type reptile who has been kidnapped by the evil King Drool, a large green Tyrannosaurus-type dinosaur. In the arcade version, Bonk is also assisted by a female version of himself.
I remember that.
Literally, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I did play this in the arcade, because that just jogged up.
There is an arcade version.
Yeah.
And literally, your only attack is you jump in the air and you dive headfirst, and you use Bonk's indestructible forehead to kill enemies. And it's a fun concept. Like, I like it. And for some reason, as soon as I started playing this game, I instantly thought of Bam Bam from the Flintstones. Yeah. Bam, I mean, Bam.
Don't get me wrong. I thought it was a fun game. And I just feel like maybe it was missing something, that it didn't quite have the juice that, you know, Sonic had or Mario had. Like, he's a good character to make your kind of your flagship, you know, mascot. But I don't know, it just feels like something was missing and I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, and that's what I thought too. And maybe in the sequels, there are a bit more. I know Bonk's Revenge is on the TurboGrafx-16 Mini, which is an interesting note, because there are two different modes on the TurboGrafx-16 Mini. There's TurboGrafx-16 and PC Engine. Mm-hmm. For Bonk's Adventure, there's only the PC Engine version.
Okay.
So all the text is in Japanese. So that was interesting to work through. And I mean, I didn't really need to see the dialogue, because I just, you know, you just hop in and play the game. So, but I thought it was interesting that they had the original as PC Engine only, but they had Bonk's Revenge as TurboGrafx-16.
Yeah, that was
so. I thought that was an interesting choice.
And I saw on here, I didn't know that Hudson Soft included a 3D remake of it on their Hudson Selection series, released exclusively. Oh, this was just in Japan. I just saw this Japan part. for the PlayStation 2 and GameCube consoles. That seems like something they should have put out in America, too.
Yeah, you would think so. And it's been re-released a few times. It was on the Wii's Virtual Console. I released on that in November of 2006. It was on the Wii U Virtual Console for all six people who had a Wii U. I was one of them, so I can't really say anything. Yeah. And then, of course, it's on the TurboGrafx-16 Mini. But all in all, as a whole, I like the TurboGrafx-16 Mini console. Like the controller, which, you know, I've got it actually right here. I wasn't quite sure what to expect from the controller, but I like it. It plays to me just like an NES controller, essentially.
It's basically just an NES controller with turbo buttons, like turbo switches on it, which I kind of liked. I liked having the turbo buttons, the turbo switches on there. I wish Nintendo would have done something like that, because the only way you could get turbo on Nintendo controllers was to either have an NES Max or an Advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the controller. Like I said, I wasn't sure what to think of it in the beginning, but it felt just like playing the NES in a way. But go ahead.
I was going to say, I do think the TurboGrafx-16 Mini is a little expensive, but I think it is worth the money though. Because it's got a lot of games on it, really good games. And even though it's, you know, this game, Bonk, it's a good game, but it's not something that's going to hold your attention. But there are tons of other games on there that will.
Oh, for sure. You can just look up TurboGrafx-16 Mini on Wikipedia, and it's got a huge list of games. And I'm excited to dive into it a little bit more. So, thank you to Axeblade07 again for sending us that. Like, that's really cool of you to do that.
For any other games you do for the TurboGrafx-16, I want to see you do one of the shooters that are on there. That was basically what that console was the best at, was side-scrolling shooters.
Okay. I'll have to dive more into it, see what's on there.
There's a lot on there.
But as far as the reception of Bonk's Adventure goes, Entertainment Weekly picked the game as the number 3 greatest game available in 1991, saying cute, cartoony, and highly imaginative. This is one of the rare games that's as much fun to watch as it is to play. And in 1997, Electronic Gaming Monthly editors ranked the TurboGrafx-16 version as number 85 on their 100 best games of all time, citing its imaginative level design and hilarious player character. So, I mean, thinking about it, like, for that time, it is a very fun game. Playing it in 2021, I see the flaws in it, but I don't think it's a bad game.
Yeah.
Like, I would recommend people try it. You're probably not going to, it's not going to hold your attention for very long if you're not a platformer fan, but it's worth trying. Like, it's not a bad game at all.
Yeah, it's kind of middle of the road. It's no Sonic, it's no Mario, but it's better than a lot of other platformers out at the time.
For sure. And I think, you know, if I were to give this on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say like 6.5 or, you know, maybe even a 7. Like, it's a solid platformer. I like the character design. I think the concept of using your forehead to kill enemies is funny. The visual is funny.
Yeah.
The graphics are good. The music is good. Like, a lot of this game has a lot of good qualities, but it gets a little repetitive. And that will be my biggest knock on it. But overall, I liked playing it. It's a fun game.
Well, yeah. You pretty much hit the nail on the head. I think it's a good solid C of a game.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's overall my thoughts on Box Adventure. I'm curious to play the sequel to see if they've added anything new to it, because I've read nothing about Bonk's Revenge, and I don't plan to once I do actually play it, because I kind of want to. I've started to do that with movies too. Like, I try not to really read anything like reviews or anything like that. I just kind of like to go in and judge it for myself.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing next week. I've been playing a lot of different stuff, so I'll just kind of have to pick something and go with it. like I said, I might actually do Kid Dracula next week, depending on how much playtime I get on it this weekend. But there's one thing I can definitely recommend to people is picking up the Konami Classics on the Nintendo Switch, the Castlevania series. It's got Castlevania 1, 2, 3. It's got all the Game Boy games. It's got Castlevania Bloodlines, which I reviewed for the Sega Genesis. Excellent Castlevania game. It's got Castlevania 4 for the Super Nintendo, and it's got Kid Dracula on it. And it's got some of the Japanese versions of stuff on it, too. So it's a huge value for... I got it for half price. I got it for like $11. It's usually like $20. But even at the $20 price point, it's well worth the money. Especially if you've never really played any of the Castlevania stuff and are interested in it, it's a definite buy for you if you have a Switch. And it may even be on PlayStation and Xbox too. I'm not quite sure. I think it is, but I'm not sure. And if they are, and just pretty much whatever platform you want to play it on, I highly, highly recommend the Konami Castlevania Classics collection.
I still need to pick that up.
Yeah, you do. So good.
Yeah, I do.
let's see. We got anything we want to throw out there before we leave this evening?
Yeah, so March 2nd, I will be doing the live edition of the 300th episode of the Derek Diamond Experience, which will include my conversation with Brian O'Halloran, who you may know from Clerks and Monsters Anonymous. And I'll also be doing, and I'm getting flack on Facebook because I narrowed it down to five, top five moments from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That was hard, man. I had to think like for an entire day on what to do. I was like, it was hard to narrow it down to five, and I think I got a pretty good list for the five.
I've still got to narrow mine down. I think I'm at like, I don't even know what I'm at right now. Like, I can think of so many moments.
Yeah,
I mean, I know what my number one is.
Yeah,
I just got to pick two through five, and five's always the tough spot because it's like everything's right on the verge of making it. And you're like, oh, what do I want to pick?
I have a feeling our number ones are going to be the same. It has to be.
You're probably right.
I'll
go ahead.
I know you've probably seen my list at this point, but I have a feeling our number ones are going to be the same.
There's a good chance you're right. So, yeah, and I'll probably be doing... you know, because that'll be the week of the WandaVision finale, so I'll probably be doing predictions on that.
Speaking of WandaVision, are we going to do a roundtable either here or on your show about that show when it's done? Because holy crap, that game has me by the short and curlies. I can't wait till tomorrow.
I know. That show is so freaking good.
It's so good.
And that bombshell they dropped at the end of that last episode, I said, holy shit,
I'm like,
quite loudly.
I don't want to give any spoilers, but the first thing I thought was like, is this going to lead into the multiverse of madness? And is this going to merge all of the different multiverse aspects of what that means into the MCU? It makes sense to me.
I've got a theory, but I'll tell you off air because it would spoil what happened.
All right. So if you haven't seen it, go see it. Go watch it right now.
Yeah, go watch WandaVision. It's an incredible show. But yeah, otherwise, just follow the Derek Diamond Experience on social media at D Diamond Podcast.
And a good episode this week, too, with the what's it called?
Oh,
The Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did a review of seasons 1 through 3 of Cobra Kai, and I also talked with an actor named Han Soto, who was in a couple of episodes of this past season of Cobra Kai, but he was also in Looper. He was in Logan. He's been in a lot of notable movies, so it was fun chatting with him.
That was a great episode.
I appreciate it.
For me, I got the Open Micers, which you can follow at Open Micers on Twitter and Open Micers Podcast on Facebook. This Saturday, one of the best interviews we've done yet. We have a man named Leland Sklar that interviewed earlier tonight for the show. He's a bass player that's been around since like 1969, and he's been pretty much on every album you've ever heard. The guy's been on over 2,000 albums. Talked to him about, he was on one of my favorite albums of all time, Billy Cobham's Spectrum. He did the A-Team theme. He did Doogie Howser. He did, what all was he on? Oh, crap. He did Alf, Quantum Leap, Greatest American Hero. The guy's been on everything, and he was the coolest dude on the planet to talk to. So please go check out that episode when it drops on Saturday, because we're definitely going to have him back on again. And the first thing I said after the episode was I texted Jacob and I said, I want him to be my grandfather. Dude, so cool. So go check out that episode when it drops on Saturday. And I think
I can't wait to hear it.
I think that's pretty much it for us. What do you say?
I think so.
If you would like to email us, you can email us all your little stories and stuff that we tell in our news section. You can drop them over at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. We are at nerdcaveretro.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at nerdcaveretro, and individually at jfunktastic and at Derek_diamond. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdcaveretro, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro, where you can throw us a couple of bucks every month, and if you keep us above that $50 level, we give you those extra episodes every month that you love so much. And this month, we're going to be doing a commentary track for Transformers the movie. Roll out. So Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
May the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.
Yes.
Oh, a fellow chucker, eh?
Never rub another man's rhubarb.